accession number 18480, Reel 2.
Alec Hawkins, Reel 2. You were telling me that you knew what kind of people the Japanese military were.
They were right, yeah. So we just had to do more or less as we was told. I know that one, I don't know really what that was over, but there was something that I don't know whether I'll ever be able to record it. There was something that I'd done. Oh yeah, I'll tell you something. We had a that was Roy. A British officer with us, a captain in the camp with us. And he got me booked out one day to go down to the with the party, a loading his scrap metal at the docks on the Japanese ships. And I refused to go. And he put me on 10 days confined to barracks in a prison of war camp. 10 days CB. And then over that, this Japanese, he knocked two of my double teeth out.
Why did he do that?
Well, because I wouldn't go on this work party.
Why did you refuse to go on it?
No, well, you know, there was times when you got fed up with doing this, fed up with doing that, and, you know, yeah, this Japanese, he showed me that he was the boss, and I had to do as I was told, and he knocked two of my double teeth out, and what happened, he hit me, or punched me, in the face. And of course, naturally enough, I fell down. And he kept on and on and on because he said that I was possibly people know what I'm talking about, riding the blows. Instead of taking the full punishment, I was riding the blows, you see. And then I had to stand up and he'd give me another one. But that wore off, and so there.
How did you feel about these punishments?
The punishment?
How did you feel about it?
Well, I suppose, you know, at that particular time I thought that was my own fault. And I learned better to do what I was told.
Was that the only punishment you got in Singapore?
That was the only punishment I got. There was plenty of the others who, you know, who didn't want to do this and didn't want to do that, and they got beat up and things like that. But I learned my lesson, and that was that.
Did you do the 10 days CB?
Did I?
Do the 10 days CB? 10 days confined to barracks? Did you do it?
Well, no, when we were in a prisoner of war camp, I couldn't go out, could I? That was a ridiculous part about it. Confined to barracks, I mean, I couldn't go out even if I wanted to.
Did the British officer tell the Japanese that you'd refused to go?
Oh, yeah, because the Japs want to know why I wouldn't go, you see. Yeah.
What else happened to you in Singapore?
Well, not too much really in Singapore. That was the last place I was actually in Singapore, at the Chinese Bukit Timah, the Chinese high school. And then we got shipped to Japan.
What was that like?
Well, we got on board the Koyoka Maru, that was the name of the ship, at Singapore. And then we went up along the Malayan coast and, of course, to Formosa and into Tokyo. Then we had about a 12-hour train ride from Tokyo to our prisoner of war camp at Iomi.
What was the voyage like in the Koyoka Maru?
All right, we were very well treated on the boat. We had, with the sailors, the Japanese sailors, we had plenty of rice. That was the only time we saw the rice. We had rice and boiled pork. And that was our food. But mind you, we were locked down in the holds with all the boards over the top of one little exit where we used to come up about once a day and go to the toilet, a makeshift toilet over the bows of the ship. And there we used to, you know, empty yourself. And then we had to go back, then we were boarded over. But on board ship, we were all right, you know. I think that was in the very early stages before the American subs got out that way.
Which year was this?
That would be the beginning, I should think, of 1943.
Where did you arrive in Japan?
We, when?
No, whereabouts?
Well, we got to Yokohama, the port, Yokohama. Then we had about a 12-hour train ride from Yokohama up onto this, onto the main island, Honshu, to Iomi, the prisoner of war camp, and that was opposite Korea. And then we were not too bad up there. We didn't have much to do with the military. We went out on different work parties. We were on the blast furnaces making carbon steel, carbide, graphite, and there was 10 of us. We had to unload 32 railway trucks of coke every day. 10 of us. But we were working in the limestone quarries, getting the limestone out, and making these, their bags, what they put stuff in, or sacks, they were made of rice straw. And we had to make those up. And we worked with the civilians. And the civilians in Japan, although I say it, the civilians in Japan were very, very good to us. And when I was on the night shift, on the blast furnaces, and then there was one little Japanese used to be on when I was on. And he used to bring me out these little ridge cucumbers. And he used to slide them into me, especially when the guards, the Japanese guards, the military, they used to walk round at different times during the night, because see that we were behaving ourselves and there was no trouble and everything. Although we didn't have any trouble with them. But this little chap, he used to slide me these ordinary little ridge cucumbers. Because, as a matter of fact, they're only water, really. Not a lot of goodness in them. But they hadn't got the food. They hadn't got the food in Japan to give us. We never had any rice in Japan. All the Japs in Japan, they didn't, well, where we were, they never drew any wages. They drew rations. So much rice for himself, so much rice for his wife, children. So they didn't draw any wages. Money was nothing to them. They just used to draw the rations. And as I say, they were pretty good to us in Japan. There was no hassle at all with the civilian population. And I know we had one big Jap. He was massive. I mean, all Japs, not small people. He was massive, this fella. And we had all nicknames for these Japs, like Saucer Eyes, Bandy, and all this, that, and other. And we nicknamed this one Dempsey. Eh? So this possibly be before your time. We named him Dempsey. So,
Dempsey was a boxer, of course.
The first thing the Japs learned was, like, all bad language, what we used to, they knew. So if you swore at them, they knew that bad language. They soon picked that up. So this particular bloke, we called him Dempsey. He was in charge of us 10 on these railway trucks. So I remember he said to us one day, he said, "You, Dempsey, Nanda." In other words, what do you mean by Dempsey? See? So we said, "Dempsey, years ago, he was a big boxing champion in England. Big bloke. Boxing. Then after then, if we never called him Dempsey..."
He hit you?
Yeah. If we didn't call him Dempsey. Oh dear. He was a civilian. But as I say, they used to... barley we had was our food in Japan, about 8 ounces of barley a day. And naturally enough, we got our own cooks and everything, and the carpets, big carpets. And every now and again, we used to have fish. But what happened, the cooks used to put all the fish in the carpets, as they were in the carpets. Boil it up, you know. And then they used to dish it out, ladle full here, ladle full there. And of course you've got everything, didn't you? You've got the fish, you've got the bones, you've got everything. But there we made do. And every now and again, they used to bring one of their old cows or oxen at the camp, and I mean there was no meat really on it, thin as a wafer, thinner than what we were. And I know the Japs, the guards at the camp, they used to give the one of the cooks their rifle for them to shoot this bullock, but everything was saved. Everything used to go at the carver. You know, the whole lot, the bill, well, as I say, everything, not the skin, but everything edible. And all the bones and everything, and then we had them for a couple of days, couple of 3 days, sort of stew and gravy and bits of meat here, there and everywhere, you know. But, I mean, that was only occasionally. That wasn't every day occurrence, the same as a fish. But we used to get 17 foot of snow there during the winter. But I don't think we really had a frost. That used to start snowing on the 1st of January. Not like England. That used to start snowing on the 1st of January. And that used to snow January right through. 4 weeks. Continuous. And all their little, possibly like where they dropped the bomb and that, the bombs, the concrete buildings still stood, but where we were up in the mountains on the west coast of Japan, they were only like wooden chicken huts, one-story places, you know. And during the winter time, they used to have the steps to go down because there was so much snow. But I suppose I was one of the lucky ones, or one of the lucky ones who didn't really experience a lot of torture.
Did you get any ill treatment at all in Japan?
I never got any ill treatment at all in Japan, none whatsoever. No, no.
Did you have to work very hard?
Oh yeah, we worked 12 hours. We worked 12 hour days. On these blast furnaces and making carbide and up in the stone quarry. We had to work up in the stone quarry sort of like winter and summer.
Did you starve in Japan?
Well, if I say yes, we had enough, more or less, to live on. But not... We never threw any food away, we'll have it that way. And in Japan, you might think I'm sticking up for the Japanese, but they're very, very, in Japan itself, they're very, very clean people. They're all beautiful, running cold water everywhere. Electric light everywhere. And about once a week, we used to have a communal bath. Plenty of hot water, you know, the sides about 5 foot high, you know, it'd take about 20 or 30 of us in there at a time, sort of communal bath. During the winter time, when we went out on roll call the first thing in the morning, we had the, you might know what I mean, Condi's crystals, the purple stuff, a big pot outside, and we went out, and we had to gargle with that to keep a cold. And the Japs, when they'd got a cold, they used to wear a, same as they do in these operating theatres, they used to wear a face mask. But, as I say, I think I was one of the fortunate ones.
Did they tell you anything about the war?
No, they didn't mention about the war. We had a, in actual fact, we never asked them. We had a radio. up in the roof. And that was run by captain, I think he was, or Lieutenant Burris, out of Cambridgeshire. And he used to tune into this radio about two or three times a week. Then he used to take a church service. And in his church service, you see, we were not allowed to congregate other than about three or four people. So at the church service, when we went up to the church service, I suppose a lot of us only went up there to hear the news, and this officer used to give it out in his sermon of the news. At one time he was reading a prayer, and then he'd turn around and say, so-and-so, aircraft shot down today, Lord be with you, sort of that. And he used to give us the news at the church service. And that was a thing that the Japs, well, how I found them, they'd take the rings, they'd take the watches, never interfere with the crucifix. If you've got a crucifix around your neck, they never interfere with that. And they never interfered with us up in our church service. We had a little hall there, sort of above the dining room, and that's where we used to get up. This officer, he sort of made an altar effort and done this altar and take these church services. And he used to give us the news more or less over the altar or over the prayer book.
So you had officers mixed with non-officers in the...
Two officers. One from London at Royal Corps of Signals and one out to Cambridgeshire. Burroughs was the name, one from the Cambridgeshire. And Stephen Abbott was the one from London at Royal Corps of Signals.
Did you fall sick in Japan?
Did I?
Fall sick?
Sick? Oh yeah, I had pleurisy. Right side. I had pleurisy there. But all they'd give us, what we got out there, was codeine crystals. That's all they'd got to give us.
Did you recover from the pleurisy all right?
Well, yes, yeah. I had the dry pleurisy. If I'd had the wet pleurisy, I would have had to have the injection and had the fluid sucked off. But, yeah. The thing of it is, we were prisoners of war. I was a prisoner of war. And I had to make up my mind that I was coming back to England. And I was going to do what I was told, and if I was ill, I was going to get better, and that's all there was to it.
How did you come to be released?
Well, that come through on the radio with this officer, that, you know, when they dropped the atomic bombs, and then they had... we knew that the war was over. And before the Japs, actually. So this particular day, they said, no working. Finish work. No working parties. All men on the parade ground. Let's say 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, whatever. So we all get staying. We knew what it was, because the officer had already told us, as English officer, this old Japs. They like to stand up high, you know. They, not down on level ground, they like to stand up high. And he was saying that the war was over. And we were no longer prisoners of war, there was no more work parties, but they said, don't go out through the gates, see, of the camp. We fear for the civilian population, you know, that they might be up in arms with you. Keep it here. Do as you're told, just take it easy. So anyhow, they, that was that. And then about a day after then, oh, they got up on top of the roof and put big boards, nearly covered the roof, and they painted PW in yellow on these boards of our hut. And then about the next day, or 2 days after the next day, then, and these little fighters came over. The American fighters came over. And of course, we were in a ravine up in the mountains. And these little fighters come through. And they dropped these leaflets. I've got some in there now, saying that within the next day there would be an airdrop, and of the food parcels, and every 2 or 3 days they were going to do an airdrop with food. And I know this particular day, with all the day when they should have do you smoke, by the way?
No, thanks.
So anyhow, this particular day when they should have dropped these parcels, we were all out on the parade ground, been walking about out there nearly all the morning. And all of a sudden, we spotted these planes, the big ones, you know, with the 4-engine jobs, coming over. Well, naturally enough, they couldn't get down on account of the air pockets in this ravine, so they were high. The stupidest part about it is that we were, never thought of it afterwards, we were all out there, and all of us, hey, we're here, hey, come on. But of course, they couldn't hear us up there, could they? And we were all shouting and calling these planes in. I mean, they were high, because they couldn't get down. And I remember that. And all of a sudden, like the leading plane, he come in as low as what he dare. And the whole bottom, well, at least it looked like it, the whole bottom of the plane opened up. And all these parachutes come out with these crates of food on. And every man, not a murmur, you could have heard a pin drop.